Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the rackets when we come back. Yeah, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools. They're banned from our public institutions. They've been banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple, time-tested laws, we now see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto. And they're teaching these ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions. We Americans have made them a part of our national psyche. And you know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, don't you think? Now, are you aware that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but your daughter can have an abortion? Your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent. Now, that's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments. Let's go back to the Mosaic Law. Our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. Now, there's still at least one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits that we receive for their observance. You know, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what the penalty of the law is to suffer from its effects. So now, whether you call this the Mosaic Law or the Law of God or the Common Law or Natural Law or Karma or something else, it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happens to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click on the email machine when you get there and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, we've been talking about the rackets, and boy, is there a story to tell. The rackets. I've got 22 of them down here. I imagine if I put my mind to it, I could find 22 more. And your government, that is the United States of America. Hell, I don't care if you're in Canada, Australia, and Western Europe, or Russia. Your governments are all running these very same rackets. And these rackets over here are eating out your substance. They're taking your money away from you. Most of them you love. You wouldn't live without them anyway, like the lottery. You know, some people don't care about the lottery. Other people, you know, they buy hundreds of lottery tickets. They just go out and they want to buy more and more lottery tickets. It's called the numbers racket. I covered that for you here the other day. Your chances of winning 84 million to one. And they called it a scourge on society back in 1900 when the mafia was running it. They called it a scourge on society. What do you call it now when the state of New York is running it? Isn't it the same scourge that it's always been? What the hell has changed? But except for the management. Same practice. Same ripoff. And, you know, we got insurance, government regulation, income tax, medicine, education. vaccination. These are all rackets. I've been talking about them and pointing out some of the deficiencies in them. And keep in mind that every one of these rackets is prohibited in the Bible. Every one of these rackets are licensed, bonded, and insured by your government. God love them, huh? Now, I saved the best of the last. It's called the bankers. Oh, God. And if you've been watching the world's economic meltdown, it's been going on for a year. It started in August of 2007. A little bit differently than the last one. The last time, 1929, the stock market collapsed, which began a long train of events which ultimately ended in housing collapsing and, you know, business collapsing and high unemployment. That was just a god-awful mess. Well, depressions are always a god-awful mess. And runaway inflations are god-awful messes. And these god-awful financial or economic messes are caused by broken law. They're caused by sin. Sin is the transgression of the law. So your Creator said, don't practice banking. Why, hell, we wouldn't have it any other way, would we? I mean, think of all the services you get at your bank. Credit cards and credit and checks and borrowing and mortgages and second deeds of trust. I mean, God, and stocks and bonds and, oh, gee, ooh, God, look at all the goodies that we get from banking. Okay, and that's true, and I don't deny it. Hell, if I had my druthers, I'd have a credit card too, but I don't have my druthers, and so I decided I'd forego the credit card. But hey, listen, the banks, they provide wonderful services, and we all love them, and we all buy them. Now, there's a side effect. It's kind of like heroin, you know. God, that stuff feels good. Well, you know, until you develop a tolerance for it, and then pretty soon it gets to be a real drag. Side effects. So, banking, you know, it's got some side effects, and the side effects are depressions and economic loss. Depression. That's what it ends up being. And that's what the world is going through right now. And it's going to go on for a lot longer. We're in the process of an economic meltdown worldwide, and you're witnessing that as I speak. It's been going on for a year. It's going to get worse for the next 2 years. The last time it took 3.5 years from 1929, October of 29, till March of 33, to descend from the peak to the bottom. Then it stayed on the bottom for another 4 or 5 years until September of 1937. And then there were some ups and downs and ups and downs until finally World War I broke the cycle and we went back, you know, to prosperity again. Now, we're going to go through the same thing here. And I was watching McNeil Lehrer last night, or Lehrer News Report to call it now, and this guy comes on there and he says, well, how long is it going to last? Like, that's what all these news guys, they keep asking. Well, how long is it going to last? How long is it going to last? What the hell do these news guys think? These guys are prophets? How in the hell are they going to know? Boys and girls, there isn't anybody in the world that knows how long this is going to last. Yeah, that's where reality is at, but they got to ask. You know, I guess it's kind of expected. How long is this going to last? I don't know either. I'm not a prophet. Last time, it lasted 11 years. And all of the sins that we've been committing between 1940, when this thing finally ended, or 41, the last one ended about December 7th, 1941, and until last August, 2007, whatever it was that we were doing that caused the last Great Depression, we have exceeded all of those bounds. There isn't any statistical number that we haven't exceeded. Well, so my common sense says, well, if the last one lasted 11 years, based upon all of our wickedness the last time, this one ought to last longer than 11 years. Would be my guess. Are depressions fun? No, it's not what my Aunt Bessie told me. Oh, no. Aunt Bessie told me, God, that was misery. My granny told me it was misery. Uncle Buster, Uncle Lyle, Mr. Harvey, Frank Rocha, everybody that lived through the last Great Depression told me it was just hell. You know, that would spur me on. I'd say, oh my God, everybody is united. Everybody is in agreement that depressions are hell. We want to avoid depression. Well, then, don't you think we ought to be asking questions like, well, what causes depressions? Well, let me answer that. Unjust weights and balances, paper money, caused by the banks. Banks cause depressions. But you don't have depression forever. You know, you have a depression, and it's hell for 10 years. Now, starting in 1940, we've had about 67 years of relative good times. Now, you know, about every 67 years, we got to have a 10-year depression. And then we'll live through this. I mean, you know, we're not all going to die. The Argentines just lived through it, you know, a few years back, 5 years ago. They went broke. Their banks went upside down. The Russians went through it about 1995, 96. So, you know, we've done it here in this country. We've been through it in 1783 to 1793, and then from 1929 to 1940. We've been through it here before. We didn't learn anything from it, and we're going ahead and doing it again, but I mean, that's like going down to the whorehouse and getting a dose of clap, and then you go back to the whorehouse and get another dose of clap, and then you go back to the whorehouse and get... There's no need telling this guy not to go back to the whorehouse. He's not going to listen to you anyway. He's just going to go back and go back and go back until finally a VD kills him, and that'll be the end of it. Most of us, when we're talking about these rackets, of which banking has got to be the chief racket. If banking isn't the number one racket, it's right up there close to it, let me tell you. Kissing cousin. Well, one of our presidents one time, he saw this. He had lived through it. His name was Andrew Jackson. And he was president from 1828 to 1836. He served two terms. He was a general. He's the guy that won the war of 1812 for the Americans after the war had already ended. The biggest and best battle for the Americans was fought after the war had been concluded, but as a result of that, Mr. Jackson had been elected president of the United States. And he had something to say about banks and bankers, and I thought I'd share that with you. Listen to this. He said in 1828, when Andrew Jackson was campaigning for the presidency, he was opposed to the central banking system. And during his campaign, he told the bankers, he said, "You are a den of vipers, and I intend to rout you out. And by the eternal God, I will rout you out." And he also said, "If the people only understood the rank injustice of our money and banking system, there'd be revolution before morning." That was Andrew Jackson. Now, we got a Secretary of the Treasury. He's from Goldman Sachs. His name is Paulson. He's called Hanky Panky Paulson, and the other guy is Ben Bernanke. These two charlatans, these two clowns over here, are called bankers. They're lying, hypocritical frauds is what they are. But they stand up in front of you, and they preach to you like a preacher, you know, in church. They're sitting there lying to you constantly. And God, you love it. You people just can't get enough of these lies. So now you're going to have an opportunity to live through a banker's depression. So just, you know, stand on the sidelines, you know, sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride, because here it comes. And there isn't anything I'm going to do to stop it. And Andrew Jackson now stopped it at the end of their reign of terror between 1794 and 1836. He said, you know, we're going to put an end to you guys. That's what we ought to do here. We ought to take these guys out, tar and feather them, stone them to death, and bury their bodies and get them to hell out of our lives. We won't. Hell, you're going to elect Bernanke and Paulson president in the next round of elections. Just mark my words. These guys will go down in history as the greatest thing since sliced white bread, probably buried next to Franklin D. Roosevelt. But somebody ought to stand up here and tell you that these bankers are racketeers. They're wicked. They're evil. Beyond description. I don't think I can tell you how wicked and evil these people are. They foment wars and kill millions of people. They do it for profit. And that's why this book called War is a Racket is so good, because it's written from the perspective of a three-star Marine general with two Congressional Medals of Honor. And he said, I spent 33 years in the Marines, most of my time being a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street and the bankers. In short, I was a racketeer for capitalism. The guy that wrote that, his name is Smedley Butler, and it's called War is a Racket. Smedley Butler, going to Barnes & Noble. Hell, they had it right on the shelf. They went right back there and got it for him. It wasn't very much. $9.95. It's marked right here. $10. Hell, it's worth all of $10. And he'll tell you about the bankers. These bankers now, they're something else. But here's old Andrew Jackson, and he said, I'm going to rout you guys out. You don't hear your presidential candidates in this round here in this country. It's Barack Obama and John McCain saying, I'm going to rout you out, Ben Bernanke. I'm going to rout out you, Henry Paulson, and I'm going to give us back gold and silver coin. I'm going to abolish the Federal Reserve and the income tax. And I'm going to put America back on the track of the Ten Commandments and just weights and balances and thou shalt not steal. Huh? Hey, when was the last time you heard that? You know as well as I do, hell's going to freeze over before you ever hear anything like that come out of a presidential candidate here in the United States, Canada, or Australia. Now wake up and let's smell the coffee. During his inauguration message, Andrew Jackson said, the federal constitution must be obeyed. States' rights must be preserved. Our national debt must be paid. Direct taxes and loans avoided. And the federal union preserved. These are the objects I have in view. And regardless of all consequences, will carry into effect. Andrew Jackson was a champion of all of the people and of the states' rights. In 1832, Andrew Jackson ran for the presidency a second time, and the election of 1832 was centered primarily on the bank issue. The Jacksonians, the Jacksonians chose Martin Van Buren to run for vice president with Jackson. The history of the present Democratic Party is traced from this convention. The supporters of the bank called themselves the National Republicans, which later became the Whig Party. They nominated Henry Clay for president and John Sargent, a member of the bank's legal staff, for vice president. President Jackson believed that the people, by reelecting him, had expressed their opinion that he should break the power of what he called this hydra of corruption, the second bank of the United States. On July 10, 1832, President Jackson presented to the Senate his veto message on rechartering the Bank of the United States. The following are some statements from his veto message. Now, here's what Jackson said. He said, having considered the bill with solemn regard to the principles of our Constitution. So Jackson looked at our Constitution and said, hey, let's take a look at this paper money and let's see where this takes us. He said, I come to the conclusion that it ought not to become a law. Some of the powers and privileges possessed by the existing bank are unauthorized by the Constitution. They are subversive to the rights of the states, and they are dangerous to the liberties of the people. It enjoys an exclusive privilege, a monopoly of banking under the authority of the general or the federal government, a monopoly of its favor and support, and as a necessary consequence, almost a monopoly of the foreign and domestic exchange. Well, boys and girls, that's where your Federal Reserve is today. They've already got that monopoly. It's much more entrenched than it ever was under the old U.S. National Bank. He went on to say, the act seems to be predicated on the erroneous idea that the present stockholders have a prescriptive right to not only the favor, but to the bounty of government for their benefit and their profit. Does this act exclude the whole American people from competition in the purpose and purchase of this monopoly? If the bank were rechartered in perpetuity, the present stockholders and those inheriting their rights as successors would be established as a privileged order, clothed both with great political power and enjoying immense pecuniary advantages from their connection with government. All right, that's exactly what you just saw happen. The big banks that are going upside down right now, going bankrupt, are being nationalized by your government at your expense for the benefit of those stockholders and bondholders, the bankers on Wall Street. They're being bailed out, and you're going to bail them out, and you're going to work to do that. Jackson didn't think that was right. Neither does the God of Israel. That's why he condemned banking and unjust weights and balances right from the get-go and told you not to do that. But, you know, we didn't listen. Jackson went on, he said, should its influence become concentrated, as it may, under the operation of such an act as this, in the hands of a self-elected directory whose interests are identified with those of the foreign stockholders, will there not be cause to tremble for the independence of our country in war? Their power would be great whenever they might choose to exert it. Should the stock of the bank principally pass into the hands of the subjects of a foreign country, what would be our condition? All of its operation would be an aid of the hostile fleets and armies without. That's where we're at today. These foreigners own that debt. They own these banks. The Federal Reserve is primarily owned by the Rothschilds, the black nobility of Europe. Now, that's our dilemma today, and that's why they're bringing in this New World Order. Jackson recognized that, and he said, controlling our currency, receiving our public monies, and holding thousands of our citizens in dependence, it would be more formidable and dangerous than the naval and military power of the enemy. You know, Thomas Jefferson said that these banks and corporations that will come up around them will be more dangerous to the average Joe Sixpack American and his freedom and his liberty and his life and his livelihood and his living standards than will be standing armies. Hell, that's already come to pass. I'm not telling you that if you don't vote for the right guy, this is going to happen. Hell, it's already happened. And the two guys running for president are going to give you more of the same. Now, that's the way that game's going to be played. Jackson went on to say it is maintained by some that the bank is a means of exercising the constitutional power to coin money and regulate the value thereof. Congress has established a mint to coin money, and Congress has passed laws to regulate the value thereof. The money so coined, with its value so regulated, and such foreign coins as the Congress may adopt, are the only currency known to the Constitution. Now, boys and girls, at Article 1, Section 10, we have 17 words. It says, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin, a tender in payment of debt. That Federal Reserve Bank over there is not authorized by your Constitution to manufacture or make money. They do. Congress gave it to them. It's called the Federal Reserve Act. Now, if you think that's good, and most Americans do, stick with a proven winner. By God, you've got it. Now, you were protected from this banking monopoly. And then, for some reason, in 1913, you said, nah, I think we'll go back to the bank. Today, I was watching the Lehrer News Report last night, and they had a guy on there. They're talking about this AIG bailout. And he said, well, we needed to do it because if we didn't do it, the economic consequences would be so much greater. And so one of the guys said, well, what causes this economic consequence? And they said, well, basically the problem that we're facing today is the meltdown of the housing bubble. Boys and girls, who do you think created that housing bubble? It was the banks. And now your bankers come to you and say, hey, give us the power and we'll fix this problem that we created. Huh? Huh? What? What am I hearing here? You're telling me you got this problem which was created by this guy, and we want to hire this guy to fix the problem that he created. I don't think that makes a hell of a lot of sense. Barack Obama says, hey, you elect me, and by God, I'll fix this problem over here. What are we going to do? Hire Henry Paulson, some Wall Street banker over here to give us more paper money? What caused our problem was paper money, boys and girls. Nothing more, nothing less. Unjust weights and balances. You wanted them, you got them. As my old granny used to say, you made your bed, sweetheart, now go sleep in it. We Americans have made our bed. Hey, the rest of you people around the world, you made your beds with your central banks, and all of us are going through this Great Depression. We're all going to get an opportunity to wallow in hell for about 10 years. That's what it was the last time. But we're not going to learn anything from it. When we get all through with this wallowing in hell 10 years from now, do you know what we're going to do? We're going to go back to paper money and central banking, just like we always have in the past. We didn't learn anything in 1783 or 1929. We're not going to learn anything from 2007. We never have in the past. We aren't now. And there isn't any reason to believe that we're going to learn anything in the future. Now, there's a few of us around here that look around. Now, I don't deal in paper money. I deal in gold and silver. When you want to go to school here at the law school, we charge in gold coin, U.S. gold coin. I don't have any checking or bank accounts or credit cards, and we don't advocate it. In fact, we teach our students very plainly here, if you want to practice this, poverty will be your result. I teach a business school. And I tell my students when they walk in the door, my opening remarks, if you're not making $100,000 a year, you're wasting your time. I tell every student that when he walks in the door. But you're wasting your time with paper money and credit cards. All you're going to get is poverty. You want to buy stocks and bonds? Hey, all you people with your stocks and bonds out there, now watch your wealth vaporize before your eyes. Now, you want to remember, your God told you not to buy stocks. Don't buy bonds. Don't use Federal Reserve notes and credit cards and pay interest and usury. All right? Now, you were smarter than God. And you went out and joined the economy, got a Social Security number, paid your income tax, did all those things that good people do. Now watch it all evaporate right in front of your eyeballs. And all the old-timers told me, they said it was hell. I've never talked to anybody that went through the Great Depression and said, wow, what a wonderful time. I never made so much money in all my life. Why, everything was just great and hunky-dory, and God, I wish we had a depression every 4 years. I've never met anybody who came up with that kind of conclusion. Now, Andrew Jackson wanted to protect Americans from this, and he said, if they, the Congress, have the power to regulate the currency, it was conferred to be exercised by themselves and Congress alone and not to be transferred to a private corporation. But in 1913, that's what we did. We transferred the power to coin and regulate the value thereof, coin money and regulate the value. We transferred that to a private corporation called the Federal Reserve, run by, today, Henry Paulson and Ben Bernanke, Goldman Sachs, Lehman Brothers, Bear Stearns. Now, you know, there's an outcome that comes from our actions, and the outcome is, that you're witnessing today is the meltdown that occurs for about 3.5 years until we reach the bottom. And we're not going to reach the bottom until the housing bubble reaches the bottom. When is the housing bubble going to bottom out? Well, if we would leave it alone, it would bottom out in about 30 to 60 days. But we're not going to leave it alone. We're going to tinker with the economy. We're going to go into bailouts, and we're going to go into all kinds of legislation, and the Congress is going to act. Okay. It doesn't make any difference whether you elect John McCain or Barack Obama. They're going to act. And when they act, they're going to preserve housing prices as high as possible for as long as possible. but you're not going to have a bottoming out until they reach the bottom. But we're going to prevent reaching the bottom as long as possible. Now, what the hell kind of sense does that make? This ship is going to sink. It's time to get off. But we're not going to get off. We're going to stay right here. We're going to work on saving the ship until it goes down and takes us all with it. Well, boys and girls, I'm off the ship. Been off of it for a long time, and I ain't getting back on. And I'm sitting over here on the sidelines saying, I'm going to watch your stocks melt and your bonds melt. I'm going to watch your house melt. Hell, I'm not going to get involved in that crap. I was in that for years and years, and I woke up one day and said, hey, I think I'll go back and listen to Andrew Jackson. Every so often, I like to read Jackson's veto message, and it reinforces in me. Now I know why it is I use gold and silver. Now I know why I don't have credit cards. Now I know why I don't buy stocks and bonds. Now I know why I don't use unjust weights and balances. Now I understand why I practice the Ten Commandments instead of the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. Hell, I already tested that. And I'm an old man, and I'm here to tell you, it didn't work for me when I did it, and I don't think it's going to work any better for you, whippersnapper. Now get after it if you think it's going to work. Prove me wrong. Go out and buy some more stocks today, would you? Why don't you shore up the market? Yeah, I got to give you a reminder here. Now, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. However, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, the beliefs, or the opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are talking about banks and banking. You know, the bankers over here operate a racket. It's always been a racket. Hell, this racket goes back thousands of years to the goldsmiths. And then they got to coining and issuing money, and people that have control of the money power, well, those are the people that actually can control your economy. Woodrow Wilson came to that realization. Salmon P. Chase came to it and recognized that if the banks can control the issuing of money, they can control the economy. And they do, and they did, and they are. And they've got the power to carry this out. Now, they're going to carry it out, and it's going to turn into hell. I mean, for the average Joe Sixpack out here, it's going to be hell. And if you've got a mortgage on your house, you're probably going to lose your house. And you're going to lose your car. You're going to lose your job. Unemployment down in Argentina in 2003 or 4, you know, a couple of years into the program down there, their collapse, hit 62%. You're going to see a collapse in wages, a collapse in purchasing power. You people on Social Security, you're going to get more and more dollars that buy less and less goods. And yeah, it's going to be hell. But, you know, we, you and I, all of us, we are the proximate cause of our own injury. We did this to ourselves. And I'm sorry as hell that I did this. I was taught from the time I was a little kid to use paper money, and I did. I was taught about stocks and bonds and how American this was and how capitalistic and so on. And I got into the program, you know, just hook, line, and sinker, just like everybody else. And I went broke. In fact, I liked old George Patton. He was quite a guy. And he said, it's not how high you climb on the ladder. It's how well you bounce on the bottom when you fall off. I always liked that piece of advice because I fell off of the economic ladder 3 times. You know, I'd go out and make a lot of money and fall off the ladder. I'd bounce off the bottom. 3 or 4 years later, I'd climb back up to the top again. And I'd fall off and bounce on the bottom a couple of times. I'm a good bouncer. So some years back, I said, you know, this might be valuable for other people. And I had some students, you know, that came to me and said, you know, Gordon, you make a lot of money. And you're just god awful good at business. Why don't you teach business? And I said, well, hell, you know, I'm not an economist, and I didn't go to college, and I don't have a degree in mathematics and one thing and another. But I got to tell you, boys and girls, the Gordon Law School, right here in beautiful downtown Isabella, Missouri, made more money last year than General Motors. Did you know that? Now, you know, if somebody was going to go get some advice, monetary advice, I'm sure that you would go to the chairman of the board of General Motors. Maybe you would go to the CEO of the world's largest mortgage broker company, Fannie Mae. Maybe. I don't know. They just went broke. I made more money right here in downtown Isabella than Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac combined last year, the year before, and this year. And I'm going to make more money next year and the year after than the United States government running Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. That's my prediction. And when that came to my attention, I said, well, God, maybe George Gordon isn't as dumb as I thought I was. I mean, you know, when you're making more money than Ford, General Motors, and Chrysler combined, by God, I got to be doing something right. I'm making more money than Lehman Brothers, Bear Stearns, both of them combined. I'm making more money than Merrill Lynch, Pierce, Fenner, and Smith. Did you know that? I just thought I'd point that out. I've got a smoother operation going here than Goldman Sachs. Now, it's true. I don't have 25,000 employees, and that's why I'm making money. I make a profit every year, year after year. And like the drug dealer down on the corner, I'm not complaining. I didn't sell $10 billion worth of stock last year, but I'm not complaining. I'm doing fine, doing okay. I'm all right. I'm an old man past 65, and I'm not drawing Social Security. I'm not on Medicare. I'm not on welfare. I'm not sucking off of the government. I'm not taking food stamps. Just thought I'd throw that one out there for you. Now, look, if you're on food stamps and welfare and Social Security and all the rest, you know, hey, how would you like to get off that? Hey, are you making less than $100,000 a year? Because if you're making under $100,000 a year, you're wasting your time, kid. Hell, I wouldn't get out of bed. Well, I'd get out of bed for $100,000, but, you know, I wouldn't get out of bed for $50,000. Now, I'm not rich by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm not poor either, and I'm not going to the poorhouse, and I think I can, you know, probably put a couple of nickels together and rub them. And then my students are pretty well able to do the same. Now, we're going into a Great Depression over here, and we're going into a Great Depression because of banks, bankers, and banking. We want to get as far away from banks, banking, and bankers as we can get. I mean, if you want to avoid AIDS, herpes, and VD, you want to stay as far away from those whores on Times Squares as you can get, kids. Now, if you're looking for a little VD and a little fun on Friday night, a hooker on Times Square, that's the girl you're looking for. You know, it's a cause and effect. You know, if that's what you want, you know, that's what you can get. Now, look, if you're looking for poverty, if you're looking for hell, you've already got that. You don't want to go to school here. But if perchance, now we're going into this Great Depression, I got to tell you that depressions have opportunities. So let me digress here for a moment and tell you a little story here. I was working for a guy named Russell Harvey when I, you know, just a kid. You know, just delivering newspapers, and I needed to run away from home. I needed to get the hell out of there. I just couldn't stand my mom and dad. I'd get the hell out of here, and I want to go out in the world and cut a fat hog in the back. So I went to work for an old man. His name was Russell Harvey. He had a chicken farm. And I was out there working away and doing one thing and another, and he was pretty good. He was a Mason guy. You know, he's pretty successful. He wasn't rich, but he was, you know, a successful farmer making money. And he kind of took me under his wing, and he explained economics to me. He explained usury. He explained interest to me. He explained how when you borrow money, it's going to eat you alive, and the interest is going to bankrupt you. And, you know, the average guy, he can't figure that out. He's been to public school. He doesn't understand geometric progression. He goes out and buys stocks and bonds, and somebody tells him to invest in his future, and he's everything's going to be all right. No, it isn't, Bob. You've invested in your IRA and your Krogh plan, and you're going to watch it vaporize right in front of your eyeballs. You're going to be flat-ass broke here within the next 36 months. All of you people listening to me right now, by and large, are going to be flat-ass broke and out on the streets. Now, that's the bad news. Now, the good news is that once you get to zero COD, which is where you're going to be when you're flat-ass broke, okay, from that point on, you are just 36 months away from that $100,000 in gold coin buried in a hole in the ground. Once we get you up to zero COD. See, most of you people are buried in debt. And as long as you're buried in debt, there isn't anything I can do for you. Nothing. Zero. You do not need to go to the Gordon Business School. I can't help you as long as you're in debt. Now, the first thing I do when a student comes in the door is I inquire, and I say, well, have you got any debt? And then everybody raises their hand. Yeah, I've got debt. Okay. And I tell them very plainly, I say, okay, we cannot make $100,000 as long as you're in debt. So the first order of business is to get you out of debt and up to zero COD. You don't have to have $10,000, $50,000, $100,000 in the bank or credit cards or credit or anything else. You just need to get to zero. And you see, most of you people ain't at zero. You're at minus. Hell, we got to get you off the minus and up to zero. Now, once we get you up to zero, now we can do something for you. So our first olive out of the jar is, can we get you to zero? And the answer is absolutely. Absolutely. I have never had a student walk in my door that I could not get out of debt and up to zero. That's the easy part. But that's the first step in the process. I mean, as long as you're in debt and making payments, you're dead in the water. You're riding on a ship with a 300-foot hole down the side. Partner, wake up. First thing you got to do, get off this ship. You got to get out of debt. Number one, who put you in debt? The banker put you in debt. Now, what the hell are you going to do? Go to the banker and learn economics? This is the guy that caused you your problem. All right, now the next thing we're going to do is we're going to learn how to count. Can you say count, boys and girls? So now I send my students over here to the book of Proverbs. Now, there's a God out there, like it or lump it, and he's a pretty smart guy. He's been around for a long time. He's got a few good lines. He's got some one-line zingers that I kind of like. One of the one-line zingers is, you know, that you find in the book of Proverbs, you know, go to the ant, you sluggard, and learn of her ways. Go to the ant. He talks about grasshoppers. He talks about ants. He talks about fools. The back of a fool is made for the rod. Now, there's a lot to be said about economics in the book of Proverbs. And there's a lot to be said in the Ten Commandments about interest and usury and the statutes and judgments and commandments that God gave us. Now, most of you guys, you walk in the door over here in my law school and you say, well, I've got this mortgage over here and I'm having these economic problems. My God, the best thing that can happen to you is the bank forecloses on you and takes that house away from you. That's the biggest blessing that's going to happen to you people out there. When the bank takes the damn car away from you, and they take the damn house away from you, it helps you to get out of debt and up to zero, which is where you got to be. See, you can't save your life standing on the deck of the Titanic. You got to get off the deck and into the lifeboat. Then once we get you into the lifeboat, we can get you over to the salvage ship. Once we get you on the salvage ship, then we can get you to New York, which is where you were headed in the first place. Remember? That was before you got on the Titanic, you know, and you didn't know any better, and you're trying to set a new transatlantic record by running through an ice field. And you people out here trying to get rich, working with the bank over here, you got your head up the wrong end. You can't make any money at the bank. Bankers make money at the bank. Oh, God, those guys make tons of money. Do you want to know what the most profitable business in the world is? Get your pen and paper out here, children, and listen to this. Let me tell you where the most profitable business in the world is. It's farming. F-A-R-M-I-N-G. Farming. Can you say farm, boys and girls? Yeah, that's the most profitable business ever created by the mind of God or man. Now just go out and ask any farmer, do you believe farming is the most profitable business ever created by the mind of God or man? And that guy's going to look at you like you came from Mars. He's going to say, oh my God, I'm a farmer and I'm losing everything. I've lost everything in farming. And he'll probably advise you to go into banking. It's good. I ain't lying to you. Banking is a god-awful good business. Dishonest, crooked, it's a racket. It's immoral, it's wicked, it's evil. But oh my God, is it profitable. Doesn't hold a candle to farming. Not a candle. Insurance is great. I told you about insurance the other day. They rake in a dollar and they make 89 cents. Pay out 11. That's good. God, that's good. Better than mine. See, in my business, I work on the 2% principle. 2%. We work on 2%. That's our profit margin. We buy it for a dollar, and we sell it for $2. That's 2%. That's the 2% principle. If you can learn to work on that 2% principle, you too can make money. Banks and insurance companies work on that 2% principle, not farmers. Now listen to this, boys and girls. Let me explain it. When you take one kernel of corn, and you take it out in your backyard, and you stick your finger into the soil, about 3 inches deep, 2 inches deep, stick the kernel of corn into the soil, and then just step on it and forget it. Just walk away and leave it alone. The rain will rain on it, and the sun will shine on it, and that kernel of corn will sprout, and it will grow into one great big stalk. Well, I guess you should plant two of them because you're going to need some cross-pollination here, but the theory is very sound. Now, watch this. The corn grows up, and we'll assume you planted 20 of these kernels of corn, so you have some pollination going on here. And it grows up, and it grows 2 ears. These 2 ears of corn have 16 rows. These 2 ears of corn produce 437 kernels on each one. That's 873, isn't it? Or 882,000. Well, it's 437. And 437, all added up here. It's 14, 3 and 3 is 6, and 7. 4 and 4 is 8. Yeah, it's 874. 874. Now, you started with 1, and now you've got 874. That's 87,400%. Actually, it's 432. I exaggerated there. It isn't quite 87,400. It's 87,200% profit. It's 87,200% return on your investment, which was one kernel of corn. There isn't any other business in the world. If you've got a more profitable business than farming, let me know what it is, would you? Send me a letter. Now, God created farming, and do you know what He did? He gave us the land, and He said, "The land shall not be sold forever." Did you know that? And so we said, "Oh no, God, you made a mistake." And so we went out and created a law called real estate, and then we created licensing for real estate brokers so that we could go out and buy, sell, and trade and make merchandise of our inheritance called the land. And that makes a lot of money for real estate brokers. Doesn't do anything for you and me, but makes money for real estate brokers. Andrew Jackson understood the pernicious nature of banks and banking and the wickedness and the evil that went along with it. And he said, "Hey, don't do that." And he said, "I'm going to help you Americans do that, avoid doing that. I'm going to veto this bill." Well, the bankers, you know, from their point of view, they just keep coming back year after year after year, and they just keep bribing your legislators until they get the laws enacted that they want. And so today, Henry Paulson, the Secretary of the Treasury, he's a banker, and Ben Bernanke, he's another banker, and they go in to the Congress and they say, "Here's the laws we want," and the legislators give them whatever laws they want. Good for the banks, good for the bankers, tain't good for us. Doesn't make us any money at all. In fact, it's a killer. You're just wasting our time, effort, and energy, and it's time for us to stop doing it. You know, it's time for us to wake up, smell the coffee, and quit involving ourselves in that kind of crap, because there's no money in that for us. But there's a lot of money in farming. In fact, there's a lot of money in other things out there that you can do. And what we need to find is a need and then fill it. And in a depression, there are needs. And so we find those needs and then we fill them. And then we deal in just weights and balances. That's gold and silver coin, instead of Federal Reserve notes and credit cards and checks and negotiable instruments and stocks and bonds and all the rest of the crap that we can now watch vaporize before our eyes. And then pretty soon you're going to wake up to the fact, "Well, that didn't make us any money." Well, let's get back to something that does. Let's go back to farming. I'm not talking about agribusiness now. I'm talking about farming. Agriculture. It's a wild new idea. Agriculture. Let's go back to agriculture. That's where the money's at. Let's go back to using gold and silver coin and just weights and balances. That's where the money's at. It's where it's always been. Well, somebody came along to you and they said, hey, let's go cut a fat hog in the back. Let's leave the farm and go to the city where we can make real money. That's what I did. They told me if I'd leave the farm, go to the city, I could get $3.28 an hour. So I did. I went to the city, and it took me another 20 years to escape. I found out when I got to the city, it cost me more, when I got there, cost me more to live there than I could make to escape the damn place. Hell, I was where I wanted to be to start with, which is back on the farm. So I went to the city so I could make enough money so I could go back and live on the farm. I had to leave the farm to go to the city. What the hell kind of sense did that make? I don't know. That's what I was told I needed to do, so I did it. And it didn't work for me then. I don't think it's going to work for you now. So if you're in the city, one of the first things we got to do is get you the hell out of there. City's not the place for you to be in a depression. If you think it is, hey, stay right there. You're where you need to be. But I'm going to tell you right now, my Aunt Bessie, Uncle Buster, Uncle Lyle, Granny, Russell Harvey, Frank Rocha, they all told me, along with the experience and the pictures that I saw of people selling apples in New York on the streets for a nickel in 1933, all told me, get the hell out of the city while you still can. Most of you people see you're like the rhesus monkey, and it's going to be this way until you're finally captured. But the rhesus monkey, they catch them very easily. They take a birdcage out into the jungle, into the forest, and they put a peanut, and they suspend the peanut in the middle of the birdcage. The rhesus monkey comes along. He's curious. He sees this thing. He says, I ain't seen that before. He sees this birdcage. Inside the birdcage, he sees a peanut. He wants a peanut. So he puts his hand flat, sticks it through the bars of the cage, grasps the peanut, and pulls the peanut out in his clenched fist. Well, his clenched fist now is bigger than his flat hand, and it will not pass through the bars. And no rhesus monkey has ever been known to let go of the peanut. So the captor just comes up and picks up the monkey, and he's got him. Just comes up and picks him up. And that's because the monkey can't let his hand go from the peanut. So his captor then spreads the bars, let him bring the peanut through with his fist. He locks him up in a cage with the peanut in his fist. Most of you people will never be able to let go of the peanut until it's taken away from you. So sit back and relax. They're going to take your house. They're going to take your stocks and bonds. They're going to take your car, take your job, and you're going to be flat-ass broke here shortly. And you can watch all of your paper assets evaporate before your eyes. That's good. Because when that happens to you, then we can go out and start in at zero COD to really making some money. So why don't you give me a call here at the law school and ask for that free general law CD package. And let me tell you about how to deal with this Great Depression. Because it's coming upon all of us whether we like it or not. So we might as well get used to it. We might as well learn how to profit from it. We might as well learn how to live through it. Hey, I'm about out of time again here, kids, so I'm going to have to remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in about 120 countries plus daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information, just go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and we emphasize adults, no kids allowed. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and Good night, friends.